Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, family-owned and operated since 1936, with locations from Bangor to Saco. Learn more at leeauto.com.
Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Grantz. Coronavirus isn't just infecting people. It has reached indirectly into many corners of American life, and as of this week, it reached into Maine as well. Which leads me to Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Mal, lead us off. The governor made some significant announcements Thursday.
Well, they took a number of steps using emergency powers, for example, to mandate that insurance companies cover the coronavirus testing. They also put an emergency rule through so that folks that are on MaineCare, Maine's version of Medicaid, will also have those tests paid for by the system. So they immediately started with those efforts. On the legislative side, they've decided to try to reduce the size of the crowd at the legislature. They might have done that a little bit earlier, given the huge crowd that was here on Thursday for both Labor Day and Business Day. But what they're doing is not having the public galleries opening. There's not going to be any more tours of the State House. One of the traditions in this building has been honorary pages from high schools and even lesser grades. Those are being eliminated to try to reduce the size of the crowds. But the legislature is going to continue with its work. They are going to try to speed up their agenda. They're supposed to be out on the statutory deadline of April 15th. They want to move that up at least a couple of weeks. And they've started to move on a number of bills that will be on the floor next week that are bound to be controversial.
Such as?
A bond package came out of the Appropriations Committee late on Thursday afternoon, and it is substantial. $65 million for R&D funding, $40 million for the technical institutes, LMF funding, Land for Maine's Future, $75 million, and a bond that just came in this week that puts together money for transportation and broadband for a total of $120 million. Those are all on party line votes, Democrats supporting them, Republicans opposing. It's the same issues. The Republicans feel that even with the situation now with the coronavirus and the disease starting to spread in this state, that we shouldn't be looking at big borrowing. We should do a minimal borrowing package. So that battle is going to come to the floor as soon as Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday. That's going to be the start of it. And we still don't have the governor's change package, which she said at her news conference will also address some of the coronavirus issues that the state can address at its level.
The governor's announcement yesterday included some really interesting and potentially very consequential recommendations. One of them was she has recommended and not mandated, this is interesting, that people basically avoid gatherings of 250 more people that are held indoors, that you'd be suspended or delayed for the foreseeable future. And what's interesting about that is that as other states have actually mandated such restrictions where they've said no more gatherings over 100 people indoors, she decided not to make that a mandate, but a recommendation. And it'll be interesting to see which communities start to either cancel sporting events or school functions, that sort of thing. I mean, I know that even in my hometown of Brunswick, there's a lot of talk about what to do with the rest of the school year. And I'm sure that other communities are confronting similar questions about what they want to do. You know, this really underscores, I think, a criticism of the federal government's response to all of this. The federal CDC has been criticized for lagging in testing, for not being aggressive in its recommendations to the states. And so a lot of states are breaking out on their own, and they're doing it their own way. And so Maine has decided to go this route. It'll be interesting to see, too, whether the state will ever decide to step up its aggressiveness in testing. As of this recording, I think there was something like 80 or so tests that have been administered by the Maine CDC. I was wondering why we haven't done more of them. And I asked Dr. Shaw about that, the head of the CDC, and here was his response.
Right now, the guidance of the federal government is that individuals should be tested so long as their provider determines that they have signs and symptoms compatible with COVID-19, even if that individual has had no travel. So we're in a position where the guidance is quite permissive as to who should be tested. One of Maine CDC's goals for the past 3 weeks, since testing became available nationally, 4 weeks, is to encourage providers who see patients of that sort to think COVID-19.
And as a follow-up to that response, Patty White, our colleague here at Maine Public Radio, also asked Dr. Shaw about why the state isn't actually going to nursing homes and places where people are in a really high-risk zone to test them as well. And here was his response to Patty's question.
In our guidance, we signaled the fact that nursing homes ought to begin preparing for the possibility of restricting all non-essential visitors. But we also recognize that visitors in long-term care facilities are an essential part of preventing social isolation of the very residents there.
Dr. Shaw also alluded to this in the question that I asked, which is he kept saying that Maine's response is you know, they're basically following the federal CDC's guidelines. And this is why you may see a lot of communities acting on their own. The federal response has been widely criticized. NPR had a person on the other day from the Harvard Health Institute who called the federal response a fiasco. And so now, I mean, I think local communities and states too are really just trying to find a way to take what they think is the best steps based on the lack of federal aggressiveness, if you will.
I think it's important to point out that the state has been more aggressive in some areas. If you remember, I reported several weeks ago where they went with a financial order with money to buy this equipment to actually do the testing at our own state health lab. That's now in place, and that's where we're getting these test results from. There are still states that do not have that capacity.
We were one of four up until last week that did not have that capacity. We finally do. And I guess the question is will the CDC step up and be more aggressive about testing more people? Because the idea is that if you want to flatten the curve, to borrow Dr. Shaw's terminology, you need to know what you're dealing with. That means more testing. And if you look around the world in the countries that have been able to flatten the curve, that's what they've done. They've done aggressive testing, you know, not just waiting for physicians to make recommendations, which is what Maine is doing at the moment. That may change. But actually going out, and in some cases, making it mandatory. I can't envision a time where we would have people doing mandatory swabs at the, you know, Kittery toll booth or whatever, but we probably will see a step up at some point, especially if we get more presumptive positive cases.
This is, of course, an election year when candidates are expected to greet potential constituents in both large groups and smaller intimate settings, but that's becoming harder to justify. Mal? How is coronavirus altering campaign strategy?
We've seen some candidates already take steps. For example, Sarah Gideon has been using these suppers with Sarah, where these groups of people get together and they have a meal and they talk politics. She suspended those. That's one response we're seeing from one candidate. Of course, at the national level, the debates, the remaining debate in the Democratic side will now be held in a studio without a live audience, again, to minimize the number of people. But not all are jumping to this. Eric Brakey in the Republican 2nd District primary says that he's still keeping up with plans for some campaign events later on, but may revise those plans as things develop.
Politicking also continues around Central Maine Power's plan to build a 145-mile transmission corridor through western Maine. The corridor is intended to carry hydroelectric power from Quebec to New England to meet Massachusetts' renewable power goals. Steve Missler, Hydro-Quebec has paid for something I don't remember seeing before, a newspaper ad spread over 3 full pages.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't actually seen a 3 full page ad. I've certainly seen full page ads, and those are really, really expensive, Erwin, as mm-hmm. I'm sure you're aware. But of course, there's a movement afoot to stop Hydro-Quebec's ability to do that, or at least stop a ballot question committee that Hydro-Quebec is controlling from basically influencing this prospective referendum. There was a public hearing this week where a proposal by independent representative Kent Ackley of Monmouth, he wants to close what he says is a loophole in Maine election law, which essentially allows foreign nationals and companies controlled by foreign governments to spend money to influence a Maine election or a Maine referenda campaign. And so there was a really interesting public hearing this week. Central Maine Power, Hydro-Québec, J.D. Irving, which is a Canadian company that owns a lot of land in Maine and, of course, is a big energy company, too. They all came out and opposed it and argued essentially that, you know, by stripping their ability to campaign on any ballot campaign here, they could basically be silenced on an issue that could affect them. Hydro-Québec sees it the very same way. Now, it'll be interesting to see how this bill makes its way through the Maine legislature because, as we know, Governor Janet Mills is a supporter of this transmission project. I think the idea of a foreign company whose sole shareholder is the government of Quebec is influencing that campaign may not sit well with a lot of people. She's going to be potentially be put into a position where she may have to either veto it or swallow a pill that she may not necessarily agree with, which is barring Hydro-Québec from participating in this election. So those ads that you're seeing in the newspaper, and there have been a lot of them, and we don't have a full accounting of how much Hydro-Québec has spent here because of the timing of the campaign finance reports. But I will bet you in the next one that comes out that it'll be a lot of money. They spent something like $230,000, and that was in the very beginning. That was before they even started advertising. And Central Maine Power, which of course is building the transmission project, has already spent over $2.2 million in advertising. That is also going to explode just based on the fact that they're running television commercials. You guys are probably all getting tons of mailers from Central Maine Power touting the purported climate benefits of this project. You know, from Central Maine Power's perspective, losing Hydro-Québec as an ally could be a problem for them too, because they're already up against it because their brand has been so tarnished over the last few years. Hydro-Québec's brand, not so tarnished in the sense that Mainers may not view them quite the same way as they view Central Maine Power.
And you got to remember, Irwin, there's multi-layers to this issue as well. The Secretary of State has certified the petitions to put a question on the ballot that would stop this project. And that's being challenged in terms of the signatures. And I suspect it will end up in court as we go along. And the legislature, meanwhile, is trying to get out of here as soon as possible. So they may just kick it to the courts and reject the bill, which would send it to the voters. And this thing may play out through multiple layers for months to come.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt Leary and Steve Missler joining us today on Maine's Political Pulse. A reminder, the Pulse podcast is updated on Friday afternoons. You can listen to it or download it at mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Most of the Pulse airs Sundays on Weekend Edition Sunday, and a portion of it also airs during Monday's Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Irwin Gratz. Thanks for listening.